Mates, it's Ryan Roland Smith. It's time for a Mariners Monday edition of the Top Step. It's Memorial Day, so I'm getting a little late on this. I've been hanging out with the family all day long. You probably saw some of the photos on Twitter, or one photo. I posted one photo downtown Edmonds cruising around. All right, so we're going to get into it. A lot to get to. I'm going to answer a big question from Jennifer Delzer, who asked me about Luis Castillo's fastball. It's fascinating. I've got some good stuff for you. Good breakdown about what makes his fastball so elite. We've talked about Bryce Miller and the spin rate. We're going to talk about a different factor for Luis Castillo. We're going to talk about some of the performers last week. Good week for the Mariners. All that, we're going to get right into it. Before we do, make sure if you're new to the show, if this is your first episode ever, go back and listen to the other episodes. They're awesome. We're going to have special guests coming up this summer as the summer rolls on and the guys get settled in. Some of your favorite Mariner players, other MLB players. Go subscribe. Tell your mates. That helps the show. Go write a review. Whatever you got to do, we're trying to grow this show. So let's get into this Mariners Monday edition of The Top Step.
No matter what happens, Ryan Roland Smith has something to tell his grandkids right here.
On the breaking ball, he struck him out. Yeah, that will be a story for the rest of his life as he strikes out Ken Griffey Jr.
This is Grant Balfour being Grant Balfour. Yeah. He is, as you mentioned, Jim, he's amped up. He talks a lot. In fact, he has the demeanor of a guy that wants to fight you.
You'll never say that I'm not killing them. Killing them.
All right, let's get into a good week for the Seattle Mariners. They sweep the Oakland A's, and you're like, well, duh, the Oakland A's are terrible. Still sitting on 10 wins, I think. Not that easy to sweep teams. That was good. It got a lot of guys back on track. It got everyone's timing right, so to speak. A couple of guys I'm talking about, obviously Luis Castillo, who was brilliant twice this week. We had a chance to see him twice. I get a chance to call those games in the booth. I love watching his games. It's awesome watching him go to work. He was dealing. It got Julio Rodriguez back on track with some of the things we're going to dive into in just a second. It got Ty France, big scare when you got drilled in the hand. He seemed to be okay. Now, if you follow me on social media, I did issue an apology. So just, again, by the way, when I issued that apology, I was just messing around. I wasn't like seriously like, sorry, guys, like this. I know a lot of people took it seriously. I was just kind of messing around. I was kind of saying it in a good way because, look, Ty France is, he's a stud. You don't want to take him out of the lineup. And I was, I was cautioning on the side of, they're going to put him on the IL. I said that. I was filling in co-hosting radio with Bob Stelton on the Wyman and Bob show on Seattle Sports Wednesday and Thursday. And for two straight days, I was saying, listen, put this dude on the IL for 10 days, please. The reason I said that, I don't want to lose Ty France in the lineup. Absolutely not. But we've seen this the last couple of years with him. He stays off the IL, keeps going, plays through injuries. And his production had suffered too. I think last year he had like a little stint and he's like, yeah, I'm good. He wasn't good. He admitted that. So my whole thing with that was like, hey, force him, strap him to a seat in that training room or strap him to one of the training tables. Don't let him get up for 10 days. Make sure that wrist is right. So that's what I said. The next day they sit him, give him a day. So I'm thinking, okay, he's obviously not right. The next day he's back in the lineup and I'm sitting there like, whoa. And again, I was on the radio. And I was like, oh, what are we doing here? This is Russian Ty France. We need him for the rest of the year. Comes out, hits two bombs. So basically the apology was, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about because I was so big on saying sitting for 10 days. Besides that, on the weekend, I went to Scott Service, had his pregame little media scrum, and he cracked a couple jokes. And Rick Rizzo's like, what was all that about? What he said was, Scott Service to me, someone asked him about the lineup. Oh, hey, so-and-so's back in the lineup. He goes, oh, well, I've got to run it past Ryan Roland Smith first. Yeah, I've got to make sure every day I run it past Ryan Roland Smith. He said these couple things. I'm like, what's all that about? Is this just a silly joke? And Rick Riz is like, did I miss something? Well, what he was referring to, and I'm 95% sure, was the fact that he was listening to the radio and me saying that, like basically telling him what to do. Obviously, I don't know what I'm talking about. That's why I didn't put the – by the way, let's clear this up. The apology went out before Service said anything. He was just messing with me, hopefully. But hopefully he understands the reason I was saying that is because Ty France is the man. He's a tough dude, and I wanted to make sure he was sitting. So I did issue that apology, but he is – dialed in, man. He looks so good at the plate. The wrist or the hand or whatever is not an issue, not a factor. He's got that little hand guard up there, but I don't think he's probably going to strip that here in this Yankee series, I'm sure, coming up. All right. So Julio Rodriguez, did anyone notice that, and this whole, like, it kind of sounds old school when you say, oh, yeah, hey, start hitting the ball the other way and you're going to get your timing right. That's not the case, guys. Like, if you have just an absolute weapon and just a beast of strength, and you can just turn on balls and just crush. That's what you do. You talk to the guys, some of these guys down at Driveline down the street, and they say like the idea of like, oh, hey, let the ball travel, get on you and hit the ball to right field. First of all, not everyone can do that, right? Edgar Martinez was a certain dude who could do that. Some other guy, Derek Jeter, could do it, not with authority, but he would hit that ball to right field. So the whole idea about like, oh, hey, if you start hitting the ball the other way, things are going to work out. Well, with saying that, you watch Julio Rodriguez. Now, you caught me. I was talking on Mariners Monday a few weeks back. At the end of April, teams were starting to pitch him in a ton. And they're doing it really well. He was getting jammed right before he hurt his back. Came out of when he was sitting down after his back. Remember he tweaked his back? It was in Toronto, I think. And he came out of that, and he just didn't look right. Like, he just didn't look the same. And he was swinging and missing a ton of pitches outside the strike zone, everything else. But I did notice this weekend, there was more of that inside-out kind of swing on him, where his hands were like really – he was kind of flipping that ball to right field. It's like the ball was kind of doing that fade spin a little bit off the bat. And all of a sudden, he was hitting the ball to right field a ton. He had sort of this inside-out approach. His swing looked a little bit different. And then he hit the home run against the Pirates on Friday. I know every ball was just flying out. I think it was something crazy, like 13 balls over 100 mile per hour exit velo. It was crazy. I didn't want to say this in the booth. I'll say it here, though. I'm like, are these balls juiced? I didn't want to say that in the booth. I never would. I don't think they are. I'm just kind of – I've never seen the ball travel like that. But Julio hits that ball to right center field, and he's kind of got this inside. It looked like he got jammed, essentially. He also hit a ball up the middle at like 107 miles per hour or something. Looked like he got jammed as well. Doesn't mean that he all of a sudden is going to turn his swing into some inside-out kind of stroke. He's still going to get his hands extended. But what I think that is, and this is why it's so important early in his career, if he has something to go back to, right? If he has something where, okay, if I kind of adjust my swing this way and it gets me feeling good about that pitch middle in and I'm able to drive the ball and I visually see it off the bat, I'm telling you, your confidence in pitch selection goes through the roof. It's massive. So you saw him do that. Then as the series went on against the Pirates, he started getting a little longer on the swing, and we saw the results. He was crushing balls. By the way, he's been crushing balls even through his skid. He's been hitting the ball on the ground a ton too. We saw that this time last year. But now all of a sudden he's starting to get that ball elevated, even on the line. Man, it is scary watching him. He is just a different dude. This is why you got to be excited about Julio Rodriguez, because the ball just comes off his bat differently, and he has enough of an approach at the plate to guess right. What I mean by that is this: if there's a 2-1 count, for example, guy's going to throw that slider and he's going to get out of the strike zone. Julio, for a split second, this is what hitters do. For a split second, they say, there is a really good chance he's going to throw a slider here. When you are struggling or you're not unsure of yourself, you're like, oh man, he may throw a slider, but he may not. He might throw a mistake. This might be a fastball. This may be the only pitch I'm going to get. And then what happens? You start chasing because you're on the fence. You're kind of in the middle. The best hitters in the game can kind of forecast what they're going to see. Manny Ramirez was the absolute master of it. You would see Manny Ramirez. I remember I faced him a couple times where he'd just go boom and just take the fattest pitch because he wasn't looking for it. He's like, you know what? I know you're going to throw this pitch at some point in the next five. I'm just going to wait you out till you throw that. And that's what he did. He was a master at it. There was times where, you know, strike out and he just kind of like nod his head and walk off. We're like, dude, he just let that thing go by. Well, because he's looking for a certain pitch, or what he does at bat number two, at bat number three, he's like, all right, if you're going to think you can live there, I'm just going to reset what I'm looking for, what part of the plate I'm looking for, and I'm just going to get you. And he does it all the time. He did that to Brandon Morrow. I remember back in like 2000, I think it was like 2008, we're playing the Red Sox at home. I think it was 2008. We're playing the Red Sox at home, and Brandon came in out of the bullpen a couple times, just owned Manny. We go to Boston, Fenway Park, and you share the weight room with the Red Sox players. So we're in there. I'm like, oh, shit, there's Manny Ramirez. He's hanging out. He goes in their video room. So I walk past. I'm like, oh, he's writing notes down. This is Manny Ramirez. He's like Manny being Manny, goofball, whatever. He's one of the smartest dudes in the game, man. I walk past, and he's writing notes. I'm like, oh, who's he watching on the screen? Guess what? Guess who he's watching? Brandon Morrow on the screen. He's in there for a good 25 minutes, and he's just writing stuff. And again, I'm not saying, oh, well, then he went out, just hit 6 home runs. But he got him. I'm telling you right now, at Fenway, you can go look it up. He got Brandon in some big situations at Fenway Park. Weekend series got him good. So it's just interesting. So anyway, back to Julio. he was kind of getting that really weird sort of inside out swing, like that, you know, like where he's kind of like, I can't even do it while I'm looking at you. If and you're probably listening, going, what's this dude talking about? But he is just so strong where he can do that. And then as he got comfortable, the pitch, they started pitching him a little bit different on the other side of the plate, and then he just went to town. It was ridiculous. The other thing too, with Julio, he's even in his skid. I think he's like going into the Pirates series. Exit velo was 92, average 92 exit velo. It's the exact same as what it was last year for him, right? It was just he was hitting balls on the ground, hitting balls at people. And again, we've seen him get in these ruts where everything's on the ground a little bit. But he is back, man. He is an absolute force up the top of the lineup. Do we want to see him go back in the leadoff spot? You tell me. I want to hear you on social media. Do you want to see Julio back in the leadoff spot? Aaron Goldsmith, who was in the booth with this weekend, he said he'd like to see him at the top of the lineup. I kind of would too, to be honest with you. I just think he's such a dynamic player. I'd like to see him at the top of the lineup. But I do like this, him hitting three and then Kelnick hitting four. Can you believe we're talking about this? Him hitting three, then Kelnick hitting four. I do like that little 1-2 punch or whatever, 3-4 punch, whatever you want to call it. I do like that too. Speaking of Kelnick, did you notice, man, like at the beginning of the year, everything was kind of staying up the middle, right? And then he's hitting the ball to left field, hitting lefties. Did you notice he kind of slid back into that where he's trying to pull everything like he did last year, getting caught out in front, swing and miss went up just a little bit, and then all of a sudden the frustration came out? Did you notice that? I don't know if you did. I noticed that where he was starting to mouth back at the umpires or getting mad and that frustration we didn't see in the beginning of April. But then I've got to give it to him, man. He's been through this before, and he's got such a foundation to lean on with his hitting coaches or whoever he's talking to on FaceTime in the afternoons on the field with a bat. But he hit that ball in the left field. Now, I know it's not, he hit the ball left field, big deal, right? But if he can identify that, when things are not going well, I'm way out in front and I'm missing pitches because I'm trying to jump on them too early. If he can notice that and stay back up the middle like he did and adjust, he's going to be just fine. The numbers you see right now, which have cooled off a little bit, you're going to see that throughout the rest of the year. I guarantee you. Another guy too, real quick while I'm on it, Cal Raleigh, month of April, we talk about all the strikeouts in the middle of the lineup. Month of April, he was like 34% strikeout rate. Now he's 19. I think he's gotten down to 18 or 17%. Awesome to see, and he's walking way more. Scott Service said that as well. When you start seeing the walks and you start seeing if you start seeing the walks and home runs go with the strikeout numbers, he can live with the strikeout numbers. Now, I'm not saying, hey, look, deal with it. They're going to strike out a ton. I'm just saying that you can definitely live with that, all right? So that's one thing with Cal Raleigh I've noticed too. Better at bats. He's starting to walk more and he's staying up the middle, et cetera. We're going to get to Castillo. What makes that fastball so unique, just like we did with Bryce Miller, in just a second. Before we do that, we have the Yankees coming to town. We've got Herman starting tonight. We all know about the him claiming it was rosin. You could see it clearly on his pants. He just served a 10-game suspension. This, by the way, this is the second time he's been pulled up for this, with having some crazy stuff on his messing with some of the stuff on his hand. But so you got Herman up against Herman up against Bryce Miller. Yes, I love watching this dude pitch. And how fun's it going to be, guys, watching Bryce Miller against a guy like Aaron Judge? And when you look at matchup wise, you got that good fast spinning fastball. By the way, Herman's got a really good spin on his ball too. You'll see him at the top of the strike zone. You got Bryce Miller up against Aaron Judge. He's got kind of that bit, that more of that loopy uppercut swing. If I'm a betting man, I'm not saying we're doing a betting segment here, but I'm going Bryce Miller versus Aaron Judge. I'm going Bryce 100%. Okay. And by the way, too, the hits, I said this about George Kirby. Tonight as well, you look at Bryce Miller's opposing batting average is 123. Herman's is his third at 165. And Shohei Ohtani too. So you've got two dudes who do not give up hits. They're stingy as when it comes to hits. All right, so, and by the way, speaking of the spin rate too, so you've got 2,600 on Bryce Miller, and you've got Herman, who's fifth highest, he's 2,500. That's what I was talking about with the spin rate, just to give you some clarity there with that high spin. And if you haven't heard me talk about Bryce Miller's fastball, go back to two Mariner Mondays ago. It says Bryce Miller. Go listen to that, and explains everything that makes Bryce Miller's spin so well. So good. The other thing is too, Julio Rodriguez, he's 14 for 30, he's in 467, six extra base hits, two home runs. That's pretty crazy. We're just going back through what we have going on this last homestand. Cal Raleigh's hitting 318 with three bombs, seven RBIs in the last 13 games. That's excellent. Offense is starting to come. I'm starting to see all these offensive numbers. I love it. It's awesome. Aaron Judge is slashing 333 with nine bombs in 18 games. Dude, this, I'm telling you, this series with the Yankees and the Mariners, this is going to be a good one. Look at those numbers. Aaron Judge slashing 333, 458, 803 with nine home runs, 21 RBIs, last 18 games. Ridiculous, okay? And who else we got? Here's another good performer out of these two teams. You got J.P. Crawford, last 10. We know what he's been doing, two home runs. By the way, J.P. Crawford, a lot stronger. The folks down the drive line who said, I said, hey, J.P., what do you got? He just has to get stronger. I was like, oh, creak, 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 that's it. What they mean by that is that rotational explosive strength, that's what they're talking about, and that's what we're seeing with the bat. So it's going to be a fun series. All right, guys, let's get to... Let me just check on the time. We're good on the time. I don't want to keep you too long for Memorial Day. All right, let's get to that Luis Castillo fastball. Now, a couple things to think about, right, as I pull up his page right here. I want to talk you through this. So, and by the way, I'm going to give you a shout-out to. Great question. I'm so glad you asked me this. Jennifer Delza said, at hyphen, I was wondering, can you explain to me how Castillo gets the ball to do this in such an amazing way? I'm in awe of the skill of the high-level pitchers. What is he doing that gets the ball to do that? So what she's referring to, there was a strikeout to Key Brian Hayes, and he swung at a pitch well outside the strike zone. You're like, oh, well, he just swung at a bad pitch. Well, no, Jennifer's got a point here, because there's not many people who can do this for the reasons I'm about to explain, like Luis Castillo does. So let's dive into it. All right, so Luis Castillo, let's talk about that fastball and what makes it so unique. So obviously... Luis Castillo throws a four-seam fastball. He throws a two-seam fastball. The four-seam fastball usually is at the top of the strike zone. The two-seam fastball is usually not so much down, but it's on both sides of the plate, okay? So the simple answer could be that Luis Castillo threw a two-seam fastball, top part, he kind of combined the two, and that's where he got that big swing and miss. Sure, you can stay on that 100%. But let's dive into what makes it different. So I want to talk to you guys about Luis Castillo's arm slot. If you notice, he's a low three-quarter guy, right? So he's low three-quarter, but he pitches north and south. In other words, he pitches up in the strike zone. Usually when you have the combination of that movement and you tunnel that with that really good changeup, with that low three-quarter, I'm thinking like Pedro Martinez, that you profile in a way where you will get a ton of soft contact and bad contact down in the strike zone. And it is difficult too, when you are a lower three-quarter arm slot, to pitch up in the strike zone. It just is, because you're very rotational when you throw. You're mechanically, you're rolling off the ball. It's hard, because what happens is you get quote-unquote underneath the baseball, and it's hard to really command it on the top shelf or generate any kind of really good velocity. Or on top of that, if you do throw a ball that runs a lot, at the top of the strike zone or middle of the strike zone, it's going to roll. It's going to get into a spot that's going to get hit hard. So, this is what we're going to talk to you about. It's the vertical approach angle. Now, that you might think, what the hell are you talking about? So, when you have a low, put it this way, from a hitter's standpoint, the hitter swings a bat, and the bat path of a hitter is a certain degree. It's either 2 to 16 degrees. In other words, you want to be essentially swinging. Call it swinging up on the ball, right? You don't want to be swinging down on the ball. If you have a negative, like if you have a sensor on your bat handle, kids, and you have a negative number, you want to make sure you adjust it to a positive number. So you're swinging up on that ball, right? Like Ted Williams talked about that, matching the path of the bat to how the ball's approaching you, or the ball, the approach angle is coming at you. So that's number one. So 2 to 16 degrees. So basically and the reason hitters have kind of evolved into that is from a baseball standpoint, you're looking at the vertical approach angle is anywhere from -3 to -7. So that's kind of the same. The lower that number is, the less degree of approach, the flatter the fastball is. Now, usually you're sitting there thinking, well, a flat fastball, everyone talks about get tilt, get, you know. If you are going to be at the top of the strike zone and that ball is flat, it's very hard to get to from a hitter's standpoint, especially visually, when it approaches, it is very hard to square up and to see. In other words, what I mean by that is when you see that ball coming at you and you're used to that same trajectory of the in between, anywhere from, you know, it's more like -4 to -5 is kind of the average, right? When you have that different angle from that low 3/4 arm slot, you know, coming to the hitter, and that pitch is up, it's going to stay above the barrel all day long. Now, combine that and that pitch you said, the one you threw to Key Brian Hayes, I guarantee you Hayes would have looked at that and said, I'm on this, because he's got to protect against that fastball up. It's 97, 98 miles per hour. Good luck. Plus, it was a two-seam, so I had all that run. That's why I got way outside the strike zone. So the big component to that is the vertical approach angle from Luis Castillo. Like I said, low 3/4, able to pitch at the top of the strike zone, plus velocity 97, stays above the barrel. Good luck, man. It's too flat. Okay, a good example of that is Jack Leiter. If you go to Google Jack Leiter, he's just the first pick. I think it was the first pick overall a couple years ago. A big part of the scouting projection with him is because of his approach angle. Pitches up in the strike zone, really good velocity, good spin too, by the way, low arm slot. Now, that doesn't mean pitchers, kids, if dads, if you listen to this, go tell your son to drop down. No. It's really hard to be in that natural arm slot. Max Scherzer is another guy. Usually, though, like a guy like Logan Gilbert, who's got that, he's 6'6", he's more over the top, right? Now, he can pitch at the top of the strike zone. He lives on extension. When you talk about, he's got the best extension in the game on his fastball. He's throwing 96 miles an hour. But if you have a bigger approach angle, in other words, if you're around -7, you want to be down in the strike zone. It's kind of the opposite, right? So you have, that means you've got that, oh, yeah, so up and down, like a Doug Fister, if you remember him. Doug Fister was like that really big tilt on that fastball. Again, that's a good thing. But when you have that low 3/4, you can pitch up in the strike zone, money with that velocity, what we saw. So the combination, yeah, that was a two-seam fastball that he pitched at the top of the strike zone, low 3/4, Key Brian Hayes thought he could see it, and he couldn't, and the ball just kept running away from him. And visually for us as fans, I know Aaron Goldsmith loved it. I loved it too. And I want to just blow up on it, but it's a third out. You got to clear out. You can't say anything until the next thing. But I just want to go, oh, my God, look at that pitch. I didn't want to nerd out and talk about vertical approach angle, but I hope that helps. It's a big one. You're going to hear way more about vertical approach angle as time goes on, I guarantee. You hear more about now extension, obviously velocity, high spin. You guys all understand about high spin. If you don't, go listen to Bryce Miller episode. But you'll also start to learn about the old VAA, the vertical approach angle. It's a big one, and that's what makes Luis Castillo's fastball very, very different. Okay, so hopefully that helps, and a great question too. I appreciate you asking that question because I love nerding out about all this stuff. Now, real quick, if you didn't listen to last Thursday's episode with Grant, go listen to it. It's a really good one. Tina Turner passed away last week. We know that. But she was instrumental in our childhood. So if you haven't listened to that, Grant and I actually have some good laughs about being kids. It's pretty funny if you need a good laugh. And I apologize too. My microphone was not set correctly. So the audio is, it's not bad, but it's not as good as crystal clear as it is now if you're listening or working out to this podcast. And if you are, get that extra rep in. All right, guys, it is Memorial Day. I've got to get out of here. I'm going to go run through the sprinkler with Lennox and Kennedy. I've got a cough as well. I'm going to get ready to go do the game tonight. I'm not in the booth. Thank you for all your comments about being in the booth. I love being in there with Aaron. Love being in there with Dave. I love it all. It's a blast. I absolutely love calling those games. It's a lot of fun. Dan Wilson's in the booth tonight. We will see you later on the week. I've got Grant Balfour joining me for some good laughs around the league, talk some baseball. All right, guys, I hope you had a great weekend. Go Mariners. They're going to take on the Yankees tonight. Might even see you down at the park. All right, guys, we'll see you.